guess I'll have to wait till later.
I call the House Finance Committee meeting to order. Today is Wednesday, March 25th, 2020, and the time is 1:35. Members present, Representative Lebon, Vice Chair Ortiz, Co-Chair Foster, Representative Josephson, Representative Wool, and I thought I saw one other, but and myself, Representative Johnston, and Representative Sullivan Leonard, Representative Merrick, and Representative Carpenter are here. On today's agenda, we will be continuing our introduction of SB 52, the Alcohol Beverage Control. Please silence your cell phones. First of all, SB 52, an act relating to alcohol beverages, relating to the regulations of manufacturers, wholesalers, and retailers of alcohol beverages, relating to license, endorsement, and permit involving alcohol beverages, relating to common carrier approval to transport or deliver alcoholic beverages, relating to Alcohol Beverage Control Board, relating to offenses involving alcohol beverages, amending Rule 17H, Alaska Rules of Minor Offenses Procedure, and providing for an effective date. And Representative Knopp has joined us. Just for members of the committee, we will have amendment deadline tomorrow, Thursday, March 26th at noon. So that's amendments are due March 26th at noon. I realize that right now, Ledge Legal is very busy. So if you don't have your amendment written, but you notify our office as far as a consensual amendment or what you're planning on doing, then that will qualify to meeting under the noon deadline. Senator Michicki and Conrad Jackson, would you like to continue the presentation? I will be holding questions till the end of the presentation. Representative Telton has joined us.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Peter Michicki, District O, and sponsor Senate Bill 52.
Good afternoon, Chair Johnston, Conrad Jackson, staff to Senator Michicki.
And Anna Brawley should be online to take up where we left off on page 13. We're a little bit more than a third of the way through the presentation. Ms. Brawley.
Yes, thank you. I'm ready. This is Anna Brawley with Agnabet Consulting, Title IV Review Coordinator up in Anchorage, for the record. Again, please just let me know if I should slow down or if you're having trouble hearing me. Slide 13, where we left off, we were discussing discussing the licensing-related changes or highlights. And again, discussing the manufacturing and retail licenses, one of which is the brewpub license. So this is something that is allowed today. A bar license or a restaurant license may have an attached brewpub license allowing them to produce beer, but again, this would streamline it and separate those two licenses, making them available for breweries, wineries, and distilleries. Slide 14, this is again what's in current law. The main proposal in the bill regarding on-site sales and off-site sales for manufacturer retail licenses is to clarify the amount of alcohol that can be sold by product type, and that roughly equates to alcohol by volume or ABV, with the idea that the higher or the more potent the alcohol, the lower the amount should be allowed for sale on-site or off-site. And again, these are consistent for the most part with what's allowed today. Slide 15, one of the new proposals in the bill is the concept of endorsements. So this is essentially expanding the physical premises that a license can operate or expanding the activities they can do. So for the most part, the proposed endorsements are things that licensees can do today. The proposal is to create the endorsement system to give more flexibility in terms of what licenses can do rather than creating a new license type for a specific situation, and again, to allow a business to choose which activities they want to engage in. Slide 16 is the list of proposed endorsements. Again, almost all of these are things that already exist in law. Some are being taken out of existing licenses and created as endorsements. For example, the three package store endorsements listed there, those are things they can do today and would just be renamed. Each of the endorsements would have a biannual fee. They would be renewed with the license, not as a separate process, but as a, you know, a package when you're going through the license renewal process every 2 years. And again, it would be up to the business to decide which ones apply to them.
Madam
Slide
Chair,
17.
After, when it, she's done, so start writing them down.
Oh, okay, yesterday we were there, so, okay.
Please continue.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Slide 17 illustrates one proposed endorsement that is not in law today that would allow free samples to be provided on the premises of package stores. So this is something that's very common in a lot of other states and cities and not something that's allowed in Alaska today. And it's also a good example of a compromise between the industry who is interested in providing this for their customers as a way to sample their products, especially high-value products that you might want to try before you buy, but also to have some limits on it. So the proposal allows a certain ounce limit for each of the product types as provided here. And the important note is that this is not additive, but it's cumulative, meaning if I'm walking into a package store and I want to sample some beer and some wine, I would not be allowed to sample 12 ounces of beer and 6 ounces of wine, but the total sample would have to be the alcohol equivalent of those. So, for example, I may be able to sample half beer or 6 ounces and 3 ounces of wine for my other half. And it would leave up to the business how to handle how they'd like to do this, whether it's a ticket system or pre-determined flights, et cetera. Slide 18 standardizes permits. Again, these most of the permits that are in the bill are ones that exist in current law or in regulation, and this has contributed to a lot of confusion about permits as it's not always obvious where you can go to figure out what permits there are, what you're allowed to do, et cetera. It also sets a standard fee for all permits, $50 per event day. So, for example, a four-day event would be $200 versus a one-evening event would be $50. And again, there's one new proposed permit, a couple new proposed permits, but the rest are already defined. So going to slide 19, this lists the list of proposed permits and either their statutory or regulatory citation for reference. So most of these are being simply relocated and renumbered. And the three to point out, just for reference, are the three on the bottom. The first is the package store tasting event permit, which will be covered on the next slide. And then the musical festival permit and live entertainment and music permit, both of which were amended recently in the bill. And the music festival permit is related only to existing music festival events in an unorganized borough, so outside of a local government jurisdiction. The chicken stock amendment is how it's been referred to. And then the live music and entertainment permit has to do with regulating the allowing of live entertainment on manufacturer retail premises, which is something that's not being controlled today. So it would make it more consistent with all other license types that have event permits. Slide 20 is the package store tasting event permit. Again, this is something that's not allowed today. But this would allow a package store, separate from the sampling endorsement, which is something they could do on a daily basis if they choose to and get that endorsement. The tasting event permit would be for a time-limited event, such as a wine tasting with dinner or a sake tasting or any type of special event you can imagine on their premises. Yeah, they must serve food. It must last only up to 4 hours or less and must end by 9 p.m., and each package store license would be able to potentially hold 6 events on their premises each year. And so, for example, if a package store has multiple licenses, they could hold up to 6 events at each of those licenses and not 6 events cumulatively. So moving to slide 21, this is, again, addressing an earlier question asking for clarification about population limits. So in current law, population limits are defined as follows. For restaurants or REPLs, restaurant eating place, they are 1 to 1,500 people. For all other license types, with some exceptions, the definition is one per 3,000. And this definition is set in statute. It's done by local government jurisdiction. So, for example, a borough with cities in that borough, the city and the boroughs have separate population limits based on their residents. And there's a formula in the statute regarding how you figure out residents, you subtract out military personnel, and so on. So that's how it's decided, and the ABC board publishes the list of available licenses. I will also note that many places have more licenses than the population limits would imply because they were grandfathered in at some point. So, for example, most communities have more bar licenses and more package store licenses than their population limits would suggest. So on slide 22, this again illustrates the population limits and how they are separately defined for each local government. And again, a borough, for example, their population limit would be set by subtracting out the population of those cities so that they're mutually exclusive numbers. But I will also note that there are several license types that are exempt from population limits. Most of these serve travelers and tourists. For example, outdoor recreation lodges, hotels can get tourism bar licenses essentially outside population limits and some other situations. And also the population limits are set by license type. So if a community has 20 different license types, for example, the population limits apply to each of those license types individually and not as a whole. So the more license types there are, potentially there are, the more licenses there are in that community. So moving on to slide 23, population limits were certainly an area of discussion from the public health and safety perspective. Limiting the number of retail access points for alcohol is associated with better public health and safety outcomes, such as lower crime. However, they, you know, they do limit the number of businesses that can get licenses in each community. And so there was a lot of discussion about the idea of local control and communities wanting to, you know, have more economic development opportunities, particularly with restaurants. So the following slides illustrate three different proposals that that respond to that interest in local control. The first is to create a new seasonal REPL tourism license. So several restaurants, particularly in small communities that serve a lot of tourists, operate seasonally already. And so this is potentially a license that they would convert to rather than a regular restaurant license, for example. There would be available in smaller communities, and they could operate essentially 6 months out of the year, which is consistent with how most seasonal restaurants operate today. Next slide, 24. The second proposal, and this is, again, something we presented on previously, public convenience licenses. These are ones that the ABC Board, restaurant licenses specifically, that can be issued by the ABC Board outside of the population limits. They are not transferable to a new location, so they are slightly different than regular restaurants, but otherwise they operate the same. So the proposal is to remove the public convenience process from statute. There's a lot of kind of logistical issues with using it. It really comes down to whether, you know, to individual business applications, and it's not really allowing a community to look as a whole how many licenses they may want in their within their boundaries. So this would convert all existing public convenience restaurants and any that are in the process of being applied for to regular restaurants, which again would allow them to be fully transferable, which they are not today. The third one on slide 25, the third proposal, is to allow local governments to petition for additional restaurant licenses. And this is something that Senator Machicki touched on Monday. Essentially, instead of looking at each individual application, this would allow a city to approach the ABC board, again, once per year per the current version of the bill, if they choose to ask for more restaurant licenses. They would need to provide a rationale for this, to say how many licenses they're requesting, a rough estimate of, you know, the total population that they serve that is not their residence. So, for example, that could be, you know, 50,000 people or more that drive through their borders, especially during the summer. And then they would also need to have public safety and planning authority. So then they would be able to petition for that number of restaurants. The ABC board would consider that petition, and if they issue those new licenses, they would not be tied necessarily to a specific application, but they would be available. So let's say I'm a business owner in that city, then I wouldn't have been able to access a restaurant license prior to that. If the city is granted any licenses in their border, then I could go apply for that. And if the ABC board denies the petition or asks the city to come back, then the city can do that at any point that they want. If new licenses are issued, then the city would have to wait a year to petition again for more licenses. So it would be in the city's interest to think longer term about, how much they would like that sector to grow over the next few years. Slide 26, this is another specific issue that was brought by some of the local governments concerning package store licenses. So rather than creating new licenses for package stores, there's an existing part of Title IV that allows relocation of an existing license from a borough that has cities in it, but the license is currently outside those city limits. Relocating that license from the borough into the city limits on a permanent basis for that license. This is a current provision that's allowed for bars or BDLs, and there's some limits on it, but this would also expand that ability for package stores. And again, this would be a petition by an applicant to make that move for an individual license. Moving to slide 27, another set of proposals has to do with regulating illegal trade practices. So there are several practices that are illegal in federal law, and most other states have adopted similar laws in order to enforce them regarding how manufacturers, wholesalers, and retailers interact with each other. And essentially the purpose is to remove any kind of restrictions or pressure, kind of market pressure that a manufacturer or a wholesaler can put on a retailer. For example, giving them a deep discount on their own products by saying, you're not allowed to also stock my competitor's products. So these are things that are already illegal and would simply be put into state law in order to be enforced at the state level. But on the next slide, 28, this is again looking across the board and considering how the ABC board and AMCO can have the resources to do its job, which includes enforcement, administering thousands of licenses and permits that are operating in the state each year, and also educating licensees, applicants, local governments, and other entities about our laws and regulations and how to follow them. So this would update many of the license fees, which are set in statute, to be more consistent with each other, so similar license types are paying similar fees, and really to update them. Many of them have not been updated potentially as old as 1980 or whenever the license was created. And if you want to refer to the Title IV review report, which is one of the supplemental documents with this bill, there is a table in the back showing the current license fee for each license type and then the proposed change, if any, to that license. Slide 29, the licensees are relevant not only for the state but also for local governments. So for places that have a local government, half of those license fees are returned back, an amount equal to the license fee is returned back to or allocated to a local government to help with enforcement and administration of those licenses. The bill would not change the system, but it would allow for more strict requirements in terms of reporting. So it would require that local governments report back what they are doing with the funds, essentially what enforcement or education activities are happening, and it would require AMCO to create a standardized form to collect this information. So this is another benefit of changing the license fees, as well as ensuring that information flow is happening. Slide 30, this is a proposal to make sure that ABC Board and AMCO are coordinating and not duplicating efforts with other agencies and other organizations around alcohol education. So while the purpose would not be to replace what other entities are doing now, because the ABC Board and AMCO are subject matter experts on our alcohol laws, and they're in a position to provide information to the various other people that use Title IV, they would be required to create an education plan detailing how they're going to coordinate with these agencies and how they would provide information on things that they are subject matter experts for, which is Title IV and related regulations. Moving on to slide 31. The next few slides cover something that is actually not in state law currently, and we're one of the only states to have that situation. Alaska is one of the few states that does not regulate internet sales of alcohol. So currently, package stores can, within Alaska, can sell to their customers, but they can't do it online. They can only do it through paper written orders. And currently, any out-of-state seller can essentially sell to an Alaskan customer with no limits, and they're also not paying any taxes on those purchases, such as excise taxes. And so many in-state businesses brought this up as an equity issue in terms of what the requirements that they are under versus people out of state. So the next slide, 32, is a proposal that's consistent with what most other states do. It's called the winery direct shipment system. So this would create a license for an in-state or out-of-state winery that would allow them to sell online. It would also be limited to those products and not beer or spirits. There would be requirements similar to what we have for package stores now. They would have to be 21 or older. They could not sell to a person in a local option area because they would not be able to utilize the written order database. And there would be a limit for personal use on what can be ordered. So not only would this ensure that the products are being delivered and the taxes are being paid, but also that they're not being delivered to an underage person, which is certainly something that's not being protected now. Moving to slide 33, the other piece of this would be to regulate the carriers that are transporting and delivering alcohol. So, for example, FedEx and UPS currently already have their own internal policies that only allow commercial shipment of wine to customers. They check ID for the customer, et cetera. They have their own rules, but not every carrier is doing this. So the proposal is to ensure that the anybody that's shipping alcohol around the state is following these rules. They would be required to get on an approved list by the ABC board showing that they have policies in place regarding alcohol shipments and also training for their employees. And the ABC board would publish this list. So anybody shipping in alcohol either in state or from out of state into our state would have to utilize one of these carriers. And again, this is not creating a new license, but it would simply be a way to close one of the biggest loopholes in terms of online sales currently, which is that the carriers are not, there's no way to know who's shipping alcohol now and what they're doing. So moving on to slide 34, again, I alluded to there is a current system for local option communities in terms of shipping in alcohol as long as that community does allow importation. So some communities are completely dry and do not allow any alcohol in their borders. For those that do, there's an existing system where a customer sends in their written order to a package store. The package store logs into a database and ensures that that person hasn't exceeded their order limit. They enter the new order in the database, and then they coordinate with a carrier to deliver that alcohol. So SB 52 does not change that system, but what it does do, moving to slide 35, is it would allow for publishing of the data on a de-identified basis. Again, the goal is not to, to expose private information, but really to look community-wide so that local option communities can understand what amount of alcohol is legally flowing into their borders. So this would remove the restriction on deleting the data each year and would require the ABC board to republish a community or a region-level report on that data. So this would be an important planning tool for public safety and for these communities. So moving to slide 36, another important proposal in the bill is to revise penalties. And again, this is in service of improving enforcement of Title IV. Currently, almost everything in Title IV is a Class A misdemeanor, everything from serving a minor down to not turning in your paperwork on time. So this has really hampered the effective enforcement of Title IV because it doesn't give any sense of proportionality for the issues. So the proposal on slide 37 is really to reclassify or to change many of the offenses down from misdemeanors to minor offenses, but to keep any serious violations, anything that merits remaining a Class A misdemeanor, and anything that's currently a Class C felony, there are some in Title IV currently, to leave those as serious offenses. So this really separates out and prioritizes the serious issues with alcohol enforcement versus a lot of kind of administrative issues. And moving to slide 38, one of these in terms of really focusing on more effective enforcement and penalties is to change the penalties for over-serving an adult or serving a minor. So currently both of these are Class A misdemeanors. However, the penalty is the immediate penalty is on the employee and not on the licensee. So certainly a licensee will get a notice of violation if something happens on their premises. However, if their employee or the manager does not inform them, or they don't find out about it for a year or a year and a half until their license is renewed, there's no opportunity for immediate rectifying of that situation. So the bill would create a $500 fine for the employee, so that's the immediate enforcement against serving a minor or over-serving a drunken person. And then it would also create an administrative penalty, a $250 fine to the licensee so that they know this happened and they have an opportunity to respond. So again, this is not to minimize the seriousness of this offense, but essentially to make sure that it's followed up on immediately, and that's not something that's happening today. And finally, slide 39, this is another proposal that's one of the priorities of the public health community, and that is to require keg registration. This is something that happens currently in Juneau and Anchorage. It requires that if you're legally purchasing a keg from a package store or a licensee, that you have to have your information, the customer's information, on that keg until it's returned to the store. Essentially, this is so that if it's found at an underage party or another situation where people are drinking illegally, that it can be traced back to the purchaser, even though the person who initially purchased it might have been a legal adult. So again, this is really to be able to trace back if there is an issue at an underage drinking situation. And that concludes the presentation.
Could you briefly go through the changes that were made on version A?
We can get that, please. I've got it. Thank you. So the changes that were made from version K to version E.A, it was amended in Senate Finance by three amendments. The first was Amendment 1 adds a new section, 0409645, to add a music festival, page 47 of version EA, and allows a nonprofit organization to hold 10 permitted beer and wine events instead of 5. Those are sort of the animal clubs or the VFWs, if you will. Amendment 2 amends AS 0409440 to more clearly define a large resort endorsement. Amendment 3 amends the brewery, winery, and distillery retail licenses to more clearly define the permissible activities which can be held on site during business hours. That's pages 22 to 24. This is the deal, if you will, Madam Chair. This is what the three entities put together after very public meetings over a couple of years and finally coming to an agreement. And that is that it says that they can have up to five live entertainment events per year, which is a different permit subject to approval by the board. They can operate from, instead of closing, a soft closing at 8 p.m., they will have a hard close at 10 p.m., and it adds a new subsection limiting who may be on site between the hours of 10 p.m. and 9 a.m. It changes the population limits for brewery, winery, and distillery retail licenses from 1 in 9,000 to 1 in 12,000. And it adds three transitional language paragraphs. And then there was one amendment on the floor, Madam Chair. That was Amendment 1. And it changed the cooling off period. If you remember when Anna talked about the local control option that we added where municipalities can petition for additional restaurant licenses. That was to occur once every 3 years.
And the municipalities felt that that was too restrictive and asked for a once every year, and we supported that amendment. So the cooling off period is now once annually. They can reapply to the board with a new request.
Representative Wolf.
Oh, thank you. Well, I guess on that issue, is there a limit to, I know there's a one per 1,500 for REPLs, but on this additional ones that the municipality can apply for, is there a limit, or if the municipality, I mean, I guess the state can say no, but is there a set limit?
There's not. It's a very specific kind of license, as you know. I would assume that the board will be evaluating. So there's two things they can do. They can have someone in mind for that license, right? Say that Olive Garden has decided they want to come to a certain community. They can have someone in mind for that license, or they can also apply for an additional license to try to draw a business to that community. Do I think there's going to be five or seven of them? Probably not. Do I think it's likely that if they have someone interested that they could get one and possibly a spare? It's probably more likely in the board process. But the board's going to be hearing from current license holders, the public, all of the entities that is what made this take 8 years to get where it is today. So I don't think it's a particularly easy process, but I think with a good case, a community will likely be issued a license or two.
Follow up?
Well, as was discussed the last meeting that we had, that and on slide 13, maybe, or one of those slides. Let's see, which one was it? Yeah, 13. Which I've never heard of a mini brew pub, but a mini brew pub, whatever that is, with an REPL. I guess that's an REPL with a brew pub, can convert to a brewery. So if I own a brewery, let's say, and I, what this new statute says is a brewery can have a tasting room, can have an REPL. So if a brewery has an REPL, let's say I'm a brewery and I'm making beer and I happen to sell food, which many of them do, and I know a couple in this community do, and then I say, well, you know what? I want to have an REPL so I could sell a little wine and stay open later and have a restaurant license. So would that be something that they would appeal to their municipality to try to get an REPL? Could a brewery do that?
I'm going to hand that one off to Ms. Brawley, if I can.
Did you hear the question, Ms. Brawley?
Yes. Do you mind restating it briefly?
Restate the question? Yesterday, the last meeting we had, I don't know if it was yesterday or the day before, I can't remember. You said a brewery can also own an REPL and a brewery can own a BDL. They can sort of have multiple licenses. So if a brewery is selling beer, has a tasting room, and is selling food, and then says, hey, I'm going to get an REPL because I sell food, I sell beer, 50% of my sales at least are food, can they apply for an REPL under this new process, which is not a public convenience anymore? It's a, I don't know what you're calling it, but you apply to the municipality. Can they do that?
Thank you, through the chair, Representative Wool. So currently, a brew pub would be able to have an REPL, and those would be, it would be a regular restaurant, so subject to population limits like it is today. And they would certainly be able to choose to apply for a different license type under the provisions of the bill. Whatever license type they get, they would be subject to those restrictions. So an REPL, they would be subject to the food restriction, and they would be subject to being required to close at a certain time, not having live entertainment without permission, et cetera.
I understand that the conversion from a brew pub or a mini brew pub. What if I'm a standalone brewery today? I sell food. I sell enough food that I feel I qualify for an REPL. Can I apply for an REPL through whatever process, through that my local municipality has one they're sitting on, and I say, hey, I'm a good business, I'm a responsible business owner, I sell food, I make beer, I sell beer, can I then apply for that REPL?
Through the chair, Representative Wohl, yes, they would be able to, they would need to essentially choose, I believe. They could not operate their existing retail license at the same premises as a restaurant. So they may choose to get that REPL and then give up the other license. And they would still be applying to the state. So the municipality may have applied to have additional licenses in their jurisdiction, but you're not applying to the municipality directly.
Sorry, last one.
All right, you do have a question.
So you said they have to give up their brewery license, but on that diagram, it shows brewery with REPL, brewery with BDL. So in that situation, they do own two simultaneously, but maybe one supersedes the other one.
Through the chair, Representative Wohl, yes, I believe they would be able to own multiple. They would not be able to operate those multiple in the same location. But it would just depend on whether the business would like to keep both license types or to just seek the different one.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Lebon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Reference was made to the grand bargain, and if I heard the Senator's comments accurately, the population ceiling went from 9,000 to 12,000. Could you give me a little background on that change?
Yeah, so thank you, Representative Lebon, through the chair. This bill is all about people wanting certain things related to the alcohol industry. And in order to get certain things related to the alcohol industry, they had to give up some things, right? We had a 120-something person stakeholder groups, and that varied from, and I will refer you to the report that has some really great information in it. I mean, it's fascinating reading. It actually is in certain parts of it. I'm not joking. But it talks about the stakeholder group, and then it talks a lot about the changes that were proposed that are in this bill and why they're that way. So that was where we ran into the collision last year, where folks that were operating in the industry that wanted to control their competition in a way that people could not find a compromise. This is more based on kind of a rising tide floating all boats. It's a little bit more like the kind of Uber of the alcohol industry, if you will. This says there's a new business type out there that's doing fairly well, and the public is voting with their feet for this new business type. I think the other license holders that are char represented recognize that in many cases that rising tide is floating all boats, and that we're going to find some middle ground here. And that middle ground in this case said, we don't want you to flood the market with new breweries and tasting rooms. We want to know kind of what that's going to look like in the future. But in exchange, what we want to do is we're going to let you stay open a couple more hours, and we're going to let you have a little bit more fun in those facilities, and we're going to let you have music events periodically by permit. And that was the grand compromise. It's something that was worked on in the public meetings. It's something we talked about in the stakeholder meetings. It was something that was publicly discussed at the individual board meetings for those organizations. And it's something that's supported by letters of support for this bill by both of those boards of directors.
Follow up? I guess the fallout on this would be, from a free enterprise point of view, you're restricting future entries into the marketplace. For example, I'm thinking Fairbanks, the population would allow for two breweries in downtown Fairbanks, and the population would have to grow another 8,000 to 10,000 to allow room for a third one if this were to happen. So I guess there would be a barrier to entry. Was there any discussion about the economics of that, or potential lost revenue from alcohol taxes being collected by a municipality or a city?
Well, there are. So that's an interesting question, Representative Lebon, through the chair. I need to remember to say that. There are so many different ways to answer that question. One of them, in fact, being that population limits are how the alcohol industry works. And it's fascinating. There may be a longer-term project where we all decide as a legislature that we're going to completely reinvent the industry and no longer have population limits. I'm interested to seeing how that can go. I'm a supporter of the free enterprise, but it's not the way it operates right now. So there is a limit. There always has been a limit. This tightens it up a little bit. Again, it's supported by the Brewers Guild. It's supported by Char because both sides gave something, and it didn't cross that boundary into where public health is impacted, right? So there are some folks that want to deal out alcohol licenses like a deck of cards. Just whoever wants one, you just give them one. And public health and safety does not support that. This bill takes all of those interests of the individual entities and has found kind of a balance. And one thing I should also say, there are communities that are already over that limit, and those facilities are grandfathered in this bill. So I think there'll be more future discussions on population limits, but this does represent the balance that they all found. It's not my balance. It's the balance that the stakeholders brought forward.
Just a follow-up to that, one of the issues with the current liquor licenses are basically they have built-in equity. In this license, the brewery license, where you've limited it to population, are they exchangeable? In other words, are we building another entity that has equity like we did with the medallion system with taxis and we've done with alcohol?
Madam Chair, as long as the alcohol system runs on population limits, and it all does, licenses will, just like limited entry and commercial fishing, just like taxis, they will have a secondary market value.
Okay, I just, this whole discussion happened with the marijuana industry, and we didn't do it with them. Representative Ortiz.
Madam Chair, can I just touch on that? Which is kind of fascinating because we've been contacted, I'm sure many of you have, but I was very active in turning the initiative into law, as many of you were. I've been getting more and more contacts from the marijuana industry folks that want limited entry because they're failing at an unprecedented amount. They're building facilities and they expect a certain amount of customer base that just isn't there. So I think there are some economic benefits to population controls as well. And our job, I guess, is to find that balance, right?
Representative Ortiz.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Senator, for bringing this before the committee. I know it's been a long road, several years of discussion, negotiation, and all that. You mentioned when you were talking about the three amendments that were done in Senate Finance, I think you characterized that as part of the grand bargain, all three of those amendments. Is that correct?
No, that would only be amendment number three. That's a part of the bargain. The first two were very specific. The first one is all about chicken stock. And the second one was all about essentially Alyeska and a couple of other large resorts.
Follow up.
So amendment number three had to do with the allowing the breweries to be open until 10 p.m. with a hard close. Is that what amendment number three was about?
That's correct. Good. If I can clarify something, breweries are not under the population limit. The tasting rooms are under the population limit. So I don't know if I clarified that earlier on, but.
That's not exactly where I was going with this. But anyway, I have a letter of support here from a gentleman who is the president of CHAR in my local area. And he supports the bill, and he talks about a compromise and all of that. But then he finalizes it by saying, I respectfully request that you pass the current version of this bill, current version of this bill expeditiously and without amendments. He wrote that on March 24th. It looks to me like the amendments were done on the 26th. So is it likely that were all the players involved on that amendment, number three amendment, in terms of having input and discussion and all those kinds of things?
I can, Representative Ortiz, through the chair, I can assure you that if you were to call that individual and ask if he meant before Amendment 3 was entered into the bill, he would say no. I was made well aware of the agreement, and I meant with Amendment 3 being a part of the bill.
Okay.
Representative Knopp.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator, I'm going to apologize up front. There were a lot of questions asked, and I was busy reading and not listening, so I may repeat some of the questions, but a lot of changes in here, and specifically what's changed in our industry is obviously the breweries, the wineries, distilleries is the upcoming thing. And so that's the section I want to focus on a little bit. So as I understand it, population limit. So you said there was no population limit for breweries, but I thought I saw one in 1,500. There was so much material, Senator, that I actually couldn't process it all. Is that inaccurate? And then my follow-up question, that would be, well, go ahead, Senator, I'll let you answer that question.
Well, what I was making clear is that the changes to the population limits are on the tasting rooms, but for a specific what we had and what it's going to, I would like to ask that question of Ms. Brawley to clarify. So because I noticed I even got the terminology for brewery technically incorrect a little bit earlier. So Ms. Brawley, oh, I'm sorry.
Did you hear that, Ms. Brawley?
I did, Madam Chair. And I would like to refer back to slide 10, if I can, as well. I think it might help. Or, I'm sorry, starting with slide 9. This is just to show the three tiers of licenses. So the manufacturing tier, as Senator Machicki said, brewery, winery, distillery, only producing beer. So the traditional manufacturing would be exempt from population limits, as would the wholesale distributors. On slide 10, the retail tier licenses, this is showing again all of these would remain under population limits. And so, as we said, restaurants have a 1 to 1,500 resident limit. The rest of them have a 1 to 3,000 limit. The three noted here as being created, the brewery retail, winery retail, distillery retail, would be the 1 to 12,000 limit for new licenses with existing ones grandfathered. And then the following slide just simply illustrates other retail licenses, most of which already exist, that would remain exempt from those population limits, such as the beverage dispensary tourism.
Follow up.
Ms. Brawley, Representative Knopp here. You know, you've been doing this for a number of years. This is like reading Greek to me, so I really need you to slow down in your explanations. I'm trying to process way too much at one time. So the question is, are breweries still under the population limit, yes or no?
If we're discussing only a brewery making beer, not selling it to the public, they would not be under the population limit. If they are selling to the public, they have to do that through a tasting room, which would be under those population limits, or they would have a different retail license, which would, for the most part, also be under population limits.
Thank you for that.
So if they're selling to the public.
So brewery is simply manufacturing and producing, distributing them. Would that be fair to say? And there's no tasting rooms in a brewery. But so in a brewery with a tasting room, does it require a retail license, or is that separate from a tasting room?
Through the chair, Representative Knopp, they would require some kind of retail license. If they were, if they only had a manufacturer license, then they would be essentially like a factory. They couldn't sell directly to the public.
So a tasting room now requires a retail license. What I just heard, correct?
Through the chair, Yes, that's correct.
So I'm trying to, I'm kind of, Ms. Brawley, I'm really trying to get around the population limits and how it relates. So whether we're talking breweries, distilleries, whatever it may be. So if we're talking a, we'll just say a 9,000 population limit is. So that would be one. That would be one brewery, one distillery, one winery, with a retail license per 9,000 people. Is that how I understand that?
Through the chair, Representative Knopp, that's correct.
And the proposal in this bill is to take that, just that number, to 12,000.
Through the chair, Representative Knopp, so currently all licenses, including breweries, including just if they're manufacturing, do have a population limit of 1 to 3,000. So the bill would take only the tasting room portion of that license. It would make it its own license, 1 to 12,000. So basically separating what's currently one license into two different licenses that one business could still hold, but they're doing different things.
Right, but if you had three breweries sitting side by side, would only one be allowed a retail license or a tasting room, or would all three be allowed under the population limits?
Through the chair, if they have a license now, then they would still be able to have that. If we're talking about licenses 5 years from now that don't exist now, then that new population limit would apply.
So only one would be allowed. Only one tasting room or retail license would be allowed with a population of 12,000. Okay, I think that's where I was trying to get to. If I have that correct, please. If I have it wrong, please let me know.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Senator Maticki.
Can I ask that a different way, please, Anna? Ms. Brawley, this is Senator Maticki. I think the question he was asking is you could have one brewery retail tasting room and not one of each per 9,000.
Through the chair, Senator Maticki, yes, that's correct. It is one of each. So if there's a brewery retail license, that does not have anything to do with a winery retail license. They would all be separate.
Follow up? Any further questions from the committee? Sure. Representative Wool.
Thank you, Mr. Vice Chairman. I guess, as you know, Senator Maticki, I was in this business for a long time, so technically I was a stakeholder, even though I didn't sit at the stakeholder table, because I did have a stake in this industry. And I know a lot of people that are still in it with multiple, package store manufacturers and BDLs. So I guess, I talked to some people that this new version that came through in Senate Finance, a couple months ago, I guess, and a lot of them didn't know about it. Some were CHAR members, some aren't, and a lot of people are not CHAR members. And just for the record, brewers are members of CHAR, too. So when they say it was an agreement between the brewers and CHAR, or brewers are in CHAR, so that's they're all in the same organization. But there's a lot of license holders that aren't in CHAR. I was one of them that I joined CHAR very briefly in my 25-year career. They didn't have meetings in Fairbanks, so I didn't see the point in joining. So I guess my point is these amendments that were added, I think, are pretty monumental, because when the statutes came through, both for brewing tasting rooms selling drinks in 2008 and alcohol tasting rooms manufacturers selling drinks in 2014, both bill presenters at the time to various committees, when asked, are these going to be taverns in the brewery situation? And in the alcohol situation 6 years later, are these going to be de facto bars? Both situations, both committees, different bills, different presenters, they all said no, because we're going to have strict limits on hours of operation, amount of alcohol sold, and no entertainment, no TVs, no pool tables, no karaoke. All this stuff was eliminated. It was just a tasting room where you go in and taste alcohol and help the manufacturer with his business by buying drinks. But as we all know, they've sort of blossomed and morphed into a gathering place where people drink and socialize. So they are sort of bars and taverns, but they still had the limits, and those those that have a BDL that they bought a equity share in, although suddenly there's these new people in town that can sell drinks that compete with them, we're told, don't worry, it's only 8 o'clock and there's no entertainment. So now that's been the case since the beginning, since 2008 for beer, 2014 for alcohol. I even talked to the bill sponsor of 2014, who's still a representative. He didn't know about these changes. He was surprised. He's like, that wasn't the intention. So, and I've talked to BDL owners recently who weren't even aware of these changes. Or if they were aghast. They were not happy with it. And I know the CHAR board has signed off on it. But I think there's a lot of people out there, BDL owners in particular, because they bought an equity share of the market, thinking, okay, there's 10 licenses in Juneau. I buy a license, I'm 1/10 of the Juneau drinking market. And now there can be up to, it depends on the population change, but I think there can be 10 total tasting rooms in Juneau. So now they're 1/20, so potentially. So, a lot of businesses feel threatened, and these changes that were added in Senate Finance are feels like mission creep to a lot of these license holders. They say, okay, this year they're gonna want this, 10 o'clock, then they're gonna want 12 o'clock, then they're gonna want entertainment 6 times a year or 10 times a year, then they're gonna want TVs to watch the election results. And in fact, some I've known have done that until the board said, hey, you're not supposed to do that. But people want it. I get it. You say people vote with their feet. I get it. I like going to places to have a couple beers or a glass of wine or whatever and watch a game or just to chat. I totally support the concept, but I also support that when people buy a license, they think they're getting a certain portion of the market, and that's changing. And you could argue, well, it's different people that go to these places. But I think a lot of people are threatened by that creep, because it's the first change since either statute has been law. So I guess I'm concerned about that. And I know CHAR signed off on it, but I don't think it's unanimous in the industry. I really don't. And so I guess that's my main concern. And if this is a bargain that was struck with tens of thousands of hours and 8 years of work, and all these stakeholders, why did this change come in 8 weeks ago and not 4 years ago? In other words, if there was such a great balance to this crafted agreement, it seems to me that if some change was this recent, and I don't even know if we're gonna get to public testimony, and I know myself, having been in the industry recently, when I speak up against it or when I act legislatively against it, I paid a serious price. Because people don't know. They go to this place, they go to a place down there, they don't know what the license type is. They just go get a couple drinks, and they don't want it messed with, and I totally get it. So,
Mr. Chairman, would you like you to ask Representative Wolf, there's a question in there somewhere, because I still have a few more I'd like to get to today.
Probably better have a question.
Thank you, Representative Knopf, for cutting me off. Don't, that's just a pun, but pardon the pun. But my point being, do you think changing the statute from the 2008-2014 is really necessary? And it seems to me, I'm not hearing from customers, I'm hearing from brewers, and that's it. Those are the people pushing for the change. And are they pushing for the change just to, expand their business, and did the other people just acquiesce, or do you really think that it's a necessary component of this bill?
Representative Wool, through the chair, competition is scary. It is scary. It's scary in any industry. It's really scary in the taxi industry when you've invested your whole life in a particular license. You fought that battle. It has, the world has not ended. A rising tide floats all boats. It makes other options available. I don't remember ever saying on the record that every BDL owner in the state was in favor of this deal. And I certainly did not say every brewery in the state was in favor of this deal. You know why? Because the breweries don't want there to be any limits on new entrants into the brewery industry. They want to compete head-to-head with other breweries. That was the strangest thing I ever saw. We were saying, we will guarantee you a grandfathered spot, and your business will have an edge on succeeding. And they said, no, we don't want it. The limit on the breweries came from what the other side wanted on knowing what the end result would look like. They're saying, we don't want any more mission creep. This is what we'll give you. We're done, and we want to limit your growth in the future. I'm honoring their agreement for the percentage of people that participated in this. And if you haven't heard from individual customers, I can provide you as many letters as you'd like by tomorrow afternoon, Representative, because I hear from them all the time. They are voting with their feet for some of them, and I have said from day one, I don't think they're the same customers. Some folks will disagree with that, but I will tell you that my wife and I go to a little place in Soldotna. We go to bars probably twice a year for two specific events that happen in our community. And we go to the little brewery down the corner pretty often. We are not bar people. We go get a beer or two at the brewery. And the last effort, the reason why this stalled, is because a legislator tried to reduce what the breweries were allowed to do, worrying about that competition. I think it's a fair balance. I get it. I get the worry for folks that feel like they've secured something in the past that has value. And it has value over and above the issue price because of the competition. But these two entities that are intimately knowledgeable about the issues in both industries have decided that they can live with this compromise. So I put it in the bill. I think folks are pretty okay with it. I'm not saying everyone's thrilled, and I've never said that, never will. There will be individuals who are struggling in their business that are not in favor of this on both sides. But I think it's something we can live with, and I think it would be good for both entities, both sides of this industry.
Representative Knapp.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Machicki, page 16. In regards to the bowling alley endorsements, I guess I'm trying to understand, is a bowling alley endorsement an endorsement on a liquor license, or is it a separate liquor license, or does it have to be an entity that has a BDL or something, or beer or wine, that has to do an endorsement, so it's contract type service to a bowling alley? How's that work?
So, Representative Knopf, through the chair, what this bill tries to do is it takes all of these, this hodgepodge of different sort of arrangements, and it actually puts them in the three systems, either a license, an endorsement, or a permit. That way, everyone doesn't have to come back here every couple of years and pass another statute for Bob's Bowling and Game Emporium that happens to be a tasting room. There'll be a very set way to do this. With that in mind, I'd like to hand that off on the bowling alley endorsement to Anna to talk about how that fits in with licenses.
Ms. Beck, are you still there?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Did you hear the question?
I did. So through the chair, Representative Knapp, the bowling alley endorsement as proposed here would be on a bar license, and that's, as Senator Machicki said, that's something that's already in the bar license statute. You know, here's the situation if you are a bowling alley. So this would simply make it an endorsement. My understanding is there are other bowling alleys that operate, and they use what's called a recreational site license. And that's a beer and wine only license.
So, Ms. Brawley, follow-up question. So the local bowling alley right here in downtown Juneau lost I'm not sure if they had a BDL or a beer and wine, but they lost their licenses here about a year ago, have not gotten one back. So under this proposal, they couldn't get it back if populations, if there wasn't one available, population limits prohibited them, but somebody could come in, like somebody that already owns a BDL license could come in, contract to operate that for them, get an endorsement on their license. Is that how I read that?
Through the chair, Representative Knopp, they would not be allowed to contract. You're not allowed to contract with a different licensee. So they would simply need to get a different license type.
Okay, Ms. Brawley, just hang on here just a minute. Senator Michicki, help me out there. How are these guys going to get a license if there's not one available under the population limits, and they can't contract with somebody to operate it for them? What do they do?
Well, I want to remind folks that this bill doesn't change the fact that they didn't have a license before, and they don't have one now.
What did they operate under before?
Well, I'm going to let Anna touch on that, or Conrad, because I don't remember the exact title, and I don't want to get it incorrect for the record. So, Ms. Brawley, what was the previous Taku Lanes arrangement? Can you answer that?
I think the point I'm trying to make, Senator, is that I'm not really seeing where this Bolinelli endorsement is unless you're a larger facility with a full-blown BDL license, and that depends on population limits if you're eligible to get one of them, or if there's one for sale, I guess, you know, in the private market. But nobody could apply. Is that correct?
So I, Representative Knopf, through the chair, the goal of this bill is not in any way, shape, or form to create a new large batch of BDLs to swamp the market. Before, they were required to have a BDL with a bowling alley endorsement. They were required to have a BDL. This separates the BDL into different endorsements that they can actually have. And what the bowling alley endorsement does is allows you not to just be at a single bar. It allows you to take your beer to the lanes itself. Does that help?
Let me change the question just a little bit.
Representative Wool, did you want to follow up on that specific question?
I might be able to help on the bowling alley question. I don't know about the endorsement. I think I have a clue about either one, but as far as Taku Lanes, I might have a little help. But
are you okay with that?
Yeah, that's fine. I just think my point is some places just like to serve a beer and wine. And so before you go there, I'm just going to ask, they do serve a little bit of food. Would that make them eligible for a restaurant eating place license, or is there some type of sit-down requirements for a restaurant eating place license?
I can take a stab at it, Vice Chair, Mr. Vice Chair.
Give it a shot.
Okay. So I think what Taku Lanes was previously operating on was a rec site license, but then it was deemed that bowling alleys didn't fall under rec site. There is a bowling alley license that you can have at a bowling alley, but you do need a BDL. You have to buy an existing BDL, and if you don't have one, you can't do it. But last year on the House floor, we amended the Save the State Fair bill by listing bowling alleys as a rec site, along with, we put some language in there for Eagle Crest, and we put a language in there for, I think, any bowling alley to sell. It basically put bowling alleys under recreational sites. So I think that's what we did. And I don't know why they don't have it yet. I think it's probably in the application process. But again, I'm not, that's as I recall.
Through the chair, Mr. Jackson, do they still have the recreational site licenses in this bill? Is that still in this bill then?
For the record, Conrad Jackson, staff to Senator Michicki, excuse me. Yes, Representative Knopf, through the chair. If you turn to page 19 of the bill and then flip also back to page 120 and 121. Well, on page 19, there is language at the bottom of that page and carries over onto page 20 that talks about former recreational site licenses and the grandfathering that was accomplished in the bill that Representative Wool spoke about, Senate Bill 16, that was a Save the State Fair. Ski lodges, bowling alleys, all of those.
Okay.
So the recreational site licenses are grandfathered, but will be transitioning to a sporting activity or event license.
But if they've already lost it, not much chance they're going to get it back then.
I can't speak to the specifics, Representative Knopf, of that particular business.
I'm going to move on, Mr. Chair.
All right.
So when Ms. Brawley was testifying earlier, I heard something about a package store sampling permit, daily sampling permit. Explain that one to me, please.
What page is that on? Ms. Brawley?
Yes, through the chair, Representative Knopp, can you hear me okay?
Yes, ma'am, I can.
Sorry, I was having a technical issue a minute ago. Yes, the package store, there's two different proposals. The first is the package store sampling endorsement. So again, this is something a package store could do on a daily basis, as you said. It would allow for limited free samples on their premises. And then the permit, which is something they could do occasionally, also on their premises, would allow a package store to host events such as a wine tasting dinner for some customers.
So an endorsement is limited and the permit is outside that endorsement, but it's not daily then, it's just occasional, or can they apply for the permit all the time? I thought I heard you say daily in there is what alarmed me.
Through the chair, Representative Knopp, the endorsement would be something that they could use every day that they're operating, and it would be similar to how Costco provides free food samples. Of course, they would still be required to check ID and not simply hand them out to everybody without limits. And then the permit, yes, would be an occasional thing. They could exercise both of them. They would not use them at the same time. They wouldn't be providing those free samples during a tasting event. But it's something they could host, say, like, as I said, a private dinner on their premises, for example.
Okay, so I'll just end with this last final question on that one. So an endorsement is one they apply for. It's in effect all the time, and that would allow them to do like a tasting room then daily. Is that fair to say? They could, well, I mean, the quantities obviously are less, but still allowed customers to taste the product.
Through the chair, Representative Knopp, that's correct. They would be able to have free samples. So they also could not sell alcohol. It would only be free samples.
And I think I just have, Mr. Chair, one more question. I believe. Going down the petition process, Ms. Brawley, is the petition process when the municipality would petition ABC Board for a separate license, and I know it's limited to, I think, once a year, or I think a year hiatus in between, but is that permit process still subject? It must not be subject to the population limits. I mean, if it was, they wouldn't have to apply. Is that fair to say?
Through the chair, Representative Knopp, the petition process for restaurants would be something initiated by a city or a local government. It would, as you said, they would be allowed to ask at least once a year, and it would, it would essentially add restaurant licenses in addition to whatever their current limit is by the population limit. So if they're only allowed to have five, and they apply to have another three, then they would still have those five licenses, but then there would be a total of eight available in their community, all restaurant licenses.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Wool.
Well, it's just a small thing, but, you know, I've been to package stores outside in the real world, and often they'll have a little beer that they want you to try that they're selling, but never do I drink 12 ounces of it to see if I want to buy a six-pack of beer. It seems like a large amount of beer. I guess that's, I'm sure the package industry came up with that, those numbers, but often they'll have like a little Dixie cup and you take a little sip and you go, oh, maybe I'll grab that porter or maybe I won't. But it just, these volumes seem large for like having a little taste in a package store. So I don't know if that's been vetted or is that, I don't know if anyone really cares. It just seems like I've tasted many beers and, you know, you go to a bar and say, hey, can I have a little taste? They just give you a little splash. It just seems like 12 ounces seems like a lot.
Mr. Chairman,
and
actually I'm trying to remember when this conversation actually took place, I think 3 years ago, and I guess what I was assured by folks, because I had the same reaction you did, it was like 12 ounces, I'll just stop by every few hours and kind of stay in a steady state here, you know, but I mean, what was assured to me by folks that were asking for this, they don't make money by giving away beer, wine, or spirits. They make money by selling them. They just want to have the flexibility for someone to have, because the 12 ounces a total, So they may be wanting to taste three different beers and have a little bit of each before they make their decision, I suppose. And I, when I walk into a package store, I know what I'm going to buy. It's Pacifico. I shouldn't do brand product placement here, but it just happens to be my favorite. So even when they have those things, I'm not particularly interested. But I think that's the thought, is that you can have a little bit of a few different.
All right, I understand. On that line,
Representative,
it's a question. I know it's in the statute, but I know initially when tasting rooms came along, they couldn't sell drinks. They could only sample them for free. Now they can sell them. Why can they also still sample? In other words, I think by law, and even in this statute, I can go to a tasting room, I can buy whatever my limit is, and then I'm allowed a free sample too, right, a taste. And that taste is still in there even for places that can sell samples. Was there a reason for that, or was that just left over?
I would have to hand that one off to Ms. Brawley.
Did you hear the question, Ms. Brawley?
I did, Mr. Chair. Through the chair, Representative Wohl, my understanding is that the sampling that occurs is typically related to brewery tours or winery tours. There was one on the Kenai Peninsula that mentioned that they provide samples throughout their touring.
Follow up. So, but nonetheless, if I go into a tasting room, by law, by this statute, I could buy my 36 ounces, and then I could say, you know what, I want some of your free samples. And if they wanted to, they would be lawful to give me whatever the free sample amount is too, correct?
Through the chair, Representative Wohl, they would. There is also a manufacturer sampling endorsement proposed.
Yeah, I guess
so. It's just something that they would need to have an endorsement.
It just seems strange that they would be able to give it away and sell it. So it's just.
So if I may, just for the rest of the committee, because you probably know this, this does not create the ability to sample in addition in tasting rooms in addition to the 36 ounces if you're talking about a brewery. That's existing law today. What this does is changes the and limits the free samples in a package store.
But I'm saying in tasting rooms you can have a free sample and a purchase sample
today.
Combined. Current and in the new Title IV as well. Okay.
Okay. We good? Seeing no further questions. Chair Johnson has set a deadline, amendment deadline on this bill for Thursday, March 26th at 12 p.m. She notes that she understands that getting the drafted amendments might take longer. As long as you communicate with their office before noon tomorrow, that will be sufficient to meet the deadline. We're going to hold the bill for today, and our next meeting is scheduled for tomorrow, Thursday, March 26th at 9 a.m.
Mr. Chairman.
Or thereabouts. Yes.
Can I say just a little tiny thing? We are available if we can help in any way, shape, or form. I know it's a multi-section bill, pretty complicated. There are really great documents in your packet, but if we can be of any help to anybody on the committee, let us know. We'll get you the answers you need. Thank you, sir.
Okay. Meeting adjourned at, 2:55.